Welcome. It's great to be back again, and thank you for joining us. I'm Paul Denham, and this is the B2B Uncovered show, where we learn from marketing and sales practitioners who are in the trenches every day. My guest today is Nasif KPO, who's a B2B marketing leader, speaker, and mentor. And we're here to learn from Nasif about ABM, and in particular, the pros and cons of using an ABM platform. So welcome, Nasif. Would you like to give us a little bit of background on yourself?
Yeah, sure, Paul. First of all, thanks a lot for having me. It's a pleasure to be on your show. I've been following it for a while, and you know, I like the way you ask questions and you know how you structure your podcast. So really thanks to you for having me.
Not at
so,
all.
So yeah, I would start with a round of introduction. So myself, Nasif, I'm currently working as the director of marketing at a company called Econ Systems, which is into the business of selling embedded cameras. I've been working here for about 1.5 years now. And prior to this, I worked with a company called Hexaware Technologies, which is into the IT space. And there I was leading the marketing analytics function. So that's a bit about my professional background. In terms of what I talk about, what I write about, I'm a bit of a marketing tools guy, and I'm very passionate or into about marketing tools, marketing technology. So I use predominantly LinkedIn as a platform to write about all that I know about marketing technology. So that's a bit about myself.
Perfect. Yeah. Perfect. Yes. And thank you for being so active on LinkedIn, because you share some great content, really educational stuff, which I have an interest in. And you've got a big following. So that is testament to the fact you must be doing something right there. So Martech, and you talked about tools. Okay. So every year, or most years, we get that Martech landscape infographic, which you're probably familiar with. I think in 2022, most recently, had something like 9,932 different tools on it. So approaching 10,000 tools. Now, no wonder marketeers and sales, because it covers a whole bunch of activities, have problems choosing the right tools. And you know, how do you put together a tech stack that you don't feel like, oh, you know, I need that new shiny tool there, because you know, it looks good, and we, you know, there's so many people who talk about their tech stack and how wonderful it is, but ABM is another big component and a growing component that vendors are pushing material to us, pushing great pitches and promises of nirvana. And that's why we're here today, because, you know, we all know and all heard of the big brands out there, particularly on the ABM platforms, and we'll probably delve into some of those. But before we get into that, why don't we just quickly, and obviously most of the listeners here will know what ABM is, but what's your definition of it? Because, you know, it depends who you ask as to what answer you're going to get. So why don't you give us yours?
Yeah, I mean, it's a bit of a tricky question, in the sense that, you know, if you try to define something, you're sort of confining your thoughts to that particular definition, right? But the way I look at ABM is it's a set of marketing activities that you would do to create demand, to engage, and to eventually convert a set of target accounts that you really want to go after, right? And these could be either accounts which are really part of your target account list that you really want to go after as the premium set of accounts that you want to chase. These could also involve your, let's say, tier 2, tier 3 accounts. So basically any targeted marketing activities that you implement to target, reach, engage, and convert a set of accounts that would fall into your ideal customer profile can be termed as ABM. So broadly, that's how I define ABM. And it's, like I said, a combination of marketing activities, which is not just limited to one technique, one channel, but to put it in one sentence, one statement, ABM is multi-channel, right? So yeah, so that's how I broadly look at ABM.
Okay. So it's, but is it a tactic or a strategy? Because my understanding, it's actually a strategy, and there's loads of tools that can help you execute on the on that strategy, and they obviously have different tactics attached to them. But ultimately, it's a business marketing and sales strategy, is it not?
Exactly. So there are a lot of people who look at, you know, ABM as just a very tactical thing. Oh, there is this tool which will help you reach so many accounts, or, you know, find target accounts which would fall into your ideal customer profile by firmographic criteria. So we just find those accounts and start sending maybe email campaigns to these accounts, right? So many people have a very tactical, narrow view of ABM, but I like to look at the bigger picture, where it's more of a strategy, like you said, which is something which happens over the long term, right? It's not done in a week and forgotten kind of an activity. It's a continuous process wherein you club different marketing techniques, marketing tactics, channels, different people come together. It could be a collaboration with marketing as well as sales, different people within marketing. So it's a combination of activities, techniques, tactics, which, you know, form part of the overall strategy. And it's something that has to happen continuously over a longer period of time.
Okay, thank you for that. So what is an ABM platform?
Okay, that's I think another tricky question, because you know, typically when people say ABM, you know, the way these so-called premium ABM platforms have been positioning themselves is that, you know, we are ABM specialists and we are the only platforms that you can use to do ABM, which essentially is not true, right? But like I said in the beginning, in my definition of ABM, any channel, any technique that you use, which is targeted or which is tailored to you focusing or you chasing the accounts that you really want to reach out to, can be termed as ABM. Only that, you know, you have a focus rather than doing a spray and pray and targeting literally everyone out there. You have a focus set of accounts, or at least a type of accounts that you really want to target, right? So in that sense, it can be different types of tools that can be brought under the overall gamut of ABM. But if you talk about the likes of Demand Base or Terminus or Sixth Sense, which are positioning themselves as specialized ABM platforms, that's one category. Mm-hmm. The other category can be something like, you know, let's take ZoomInfo, for example, right? ZoomInfo has now introduced an intent intelligence module as well, similar to a Demand Base or a Terminus. But until very recently, ZoomInfo was more like a database where you download account and contact details, right? If you only take that module, even that can be considered as an ABM platform, in the sense that you have targeted a specific defined set of accounts that you want to go after. And ZoomInfo is a platform that will help you download details and data on these accounts and contacts who are working in those accounts, right? So in that sense, even a ZoomInfo is an ABM platform, right? And there could be other platforms that you use to run ABM campaigns. For example, an email marketing tool, right? So an email automation tool, which is like the benchmarks, and like the even if you take some of those heavy marketing automation tools like a HubSpot or a Marketo or any of those marketing automation platforms, even that can be practically brought under the umbrella of ABM, right? So it's not like one type of tool, yeah, you know, that can be only used for ABM, but it's like I said, a broad strategy wherein different types of tools like an email marketing tool, a database, or even intent intelligence platforms like a Demand Base, Sixth Sense, Terminus, etc., would be a part of.
Wow, so it gets more opaque the more we talk about this, doesn't it? It's like, okay, and actually I totally agree with you. There is this challenge here, because I was looking at G2 earlier, and it was comparing the likes of, yeah, you know, Terminus, Demand Base, and it had ZoomInfo and it had Leadero, it had, you know, pure sort of database sources in the same sort of comparison. I was thinking, okay, that's interesting, because that would confuse anybody who's trying to understand what an ABM platform is. So, to all intents and purposes, the term ABM platform on its own is a little bit vacuous, isn't it? It's not that helpful. But for the purpose of this podcast and our chat, we were really honing in at the I suppose the big players here, right? You know, the term is demand base, the Sixth Sense, the Triblios, etc. And wondering, you know, what are the pros? Why would someone invest in one of these platforms? And what are the benefits? And perhaps what are some of the downsides? And with your experience, particularly in your last company where you were using one of these platforms, I found it really interesting when we were talking earlier about what you saw as the good points and the bad points. So that's something I'd really like to extract from you in a conversation and share with my audience here today. So that particular one, what was that? That was demand base, I think, was it?
Yeah, that was demand base, correct. We had evaluated other platforms as well, but we ended up using demand base, yeah.
Right. And were you involved in the evaluation of said platforms?
Yeah, I mean, so when we actually started evaluating, it just so happened that, you know, they had reached out to us and we actually ended up looking at them and another platform. So actually, demand base has their own intent, patented intent intelligence engine. We are actually looking at Bombora through a third-party vendor, and we ended up using Demandbase because their intent intelligence platform and the kind of content or access they had to a wider intent data that was actually better than a Bombora-based platform. So that's the reason why we went with Demandbase.
Okay. And was that quite a difficult evaluation process in looking? I mean, yeah, we talked earlier about the thousands of tools out there, but did you find that a relatively simple exercise going forward in terms of evaluating the landscape?
Not so simple, actually. I mean, there were predominantly two reasons to it. One is that, you know, the intent intelligence as a concept itself was new to us. You know, there weren't a lot of people in the IT industry. Even if you go to the large ones like, you know, Cognizant, Infosys, TCS, I don't know the situation now, but back then in 2017, 18, nobody was even talking about intent intelligence, at least in the IT world, right? Mm-hmm. So we were very new to the concept as such. So that was one part. The second part was, it was not like, you know, an email marketing or marketing automation platform wherein we had tried other platforms and we know how this works, right? It sort of related to the first point that I mentioned. So it was not like we had a lot of luxury to use it for a trial period of, let's say, 1 month, try it out. And then, it's not that we had the liberty to not go ahead with it. So we really had to take that first step and risk and say, okay, we want to try this platform for a while and see if this is going to be really helpful. So there were a lot of uncertainties. So this was the second reason why it was not that a simple process to evaluate such a platform, to be very honest.
Okay. So before you got into this scenario, we're going to buy a platform. Was the organization doing any sort of account-centric marketing prior to that? Or was it a case of, no, let's do it, but we need a tool to do that?
We were actually doing, like I said, ABM is a very loosely used term. Yeah. I don't think we were using it as a term for the different marketing activities that we're doing, but rather, yeah, we were doing email marketing to targeted set of accounts. We had target account lists defined for each of the regions across US, Europe, etc. We did run some other campaigns, like, for example, content syndication campaigns, wherein we worked with third-party media outlets and said, hey, we want leads only from these accounts. And we did run some PPC campaigns in LinkedIn as well, where we are targeting defined set of accounts. So yeah, I mean, though we did not call it ABM, we were doing a lot of focused, targeted account-based marketing activities, yeah.
Okay, I gotcha. Okay, so looking back on it, and now you've got the benefit of hindsight, you've moved away from that organization, you're in a different organization, you're not using Demandbase. And Demandbase could be replaced with pretty much any of the other big players, right? We're not specifically talking about Demandbase as a, well, this is the product, this is just illustrative. Because it, as you said, this is a tool that you can't just try it for 2 weeks and see whether you like it. You've got to go almost all in. And not necessarily with everybody in your team. I would say that the best way to do is to start slowly and learn how to walk before you start running. Otherwise, you're going to trip up.
Absolutely.
So clearly, there's a ramp up to this. But you can't really, as it were, test it. And it's only after a certain period of time, and that would presumably depend upon, you know, the buy cycle. How long is the buy cycle of the particular service or solution that you're selling? With regards to your business, roughly what was that? Was it in months? Was it in several months, years? What was it? What was the buy cycle?
The duration for which we're using demand base?
No, not the duration, but the normal typical length of time that it would take from the point that there was an identified opportunity through to contracts being signed.
Oh, okay. So our buying cycles typically, if we just talk about the time from we actually identified an opportunity, and there is a stage prior to that, as you know, right? You've got to generate the lead. You've got to nurture the lead. You've got to do that handoff to sales, and they got to come on a call and they have to discuss and understand if there is a real opportunity, right? So that takes a bit of a time. Sure. But if I purely take the point from which an opportunity was identified, it took anywhere between, let's say, 3 months to almost an year to close deals, or, to get a go or no go kind of a decision. Okay. I think there were a few exceptions which went for more than 12 months, but they are not a lot. They were outliers.
Sure.
But yeah, on average, anywhere between 3 months to 12 months.
Okay. And to get to that point where there is an identified opportunity, as we know, that is what we would call the research journey, I suppose, when there a pain point or some sort of challenge arises within an organization and they decide, this is getting painful enough that we've actually got to do something about it. And we know that uncovering that research that people do, let's say let's call it a buying committee or decision-making unit. And that can be anywhere from 2 to 10 people, I suppose, largely on most of the stats that you read about. That can be anywhere from, a couple of weeks through to months, if not a year or plus. It really does depend. So if you add those two together, it can be quite a long cycle from the point that someone raises their hand or has started actively buying. And what I mean by that is actually good, decent research, because they want to scratch the itch that they have to the point where the deal is done. Okay, so you're looking back on that now and you see you've got the benefit, you've got the wisdom and the hindsight of that. What do you think, if you were being objective about it, what would you think the three main benefits were for you guys having that tool, what I would call a sort of premier ABM platform, which is more than just a database? So it's at the top end.
Yeah, so the major benefit that we're getting out of DemandBase was to put it simply, it helped us prioritize the accounts that we wanted to go after. Just to put things in perspective, we had roughly, this was back in 2019, and roughly we had about 2000 plus target accounts in US alone. And this was roughly about 800, 900 for the whole of Europe. Now, the problem we had was, like any other company which has a large target account list was that we had no way to prioritize these accounts beyond the usual firmographic criteria, such as industry, revenue, region. And in fact, it's interesting that, we actually had already arrived at this list by looking at this firmographic criteria. So what's next, right? You couldn't potentially go after every single person in the buy-in committee in every one of these accounts, right? So we had to find a way to prioritize these accounts, and that's where something like an intent data helped. So what intent intelligence tells you is basically how the concept works is intent data tells you what is the type of content or what are the type of content items that the accounts that you are interested in are consuming on the web. Just to give an example, let's say let's imagine Microsoft as one of our target accounts, and we want to know if Microsoft people at Microsoft are consuming content around, let's say, for example, customer experience transformation, right? And Demandbase or a Terminus or a Sixth Sense would tell you, hey, look, these many people from Microsoft are reading or have read about customer experience transformation in the last 12 months or so. Of course, you cannot pinpoint at a particular person because of privacy reasons, but at an account level, you get this consolidated view. Now, how this helped was we are able to say, okay, out of the 2,000 accounts, out of the 3,000 accounts that we wanted to target, only 500 people are consuming content around customer experience transformation on the web. And that's what you get from a platform like a Demandbase or the like, right? So we were able to say, okay, rather than going after all the 3,000 for this particular service offering, customer experience transformation, we would focus our efforts only on this 500, right? And this was the biggest use case that we had back then in Hexaware. And I think even today, as it stands today, even though the platform has evolved, these platforms have evolved quite a lot in terms of offering a full suite of solutions. Even today, this is one of the biggest advantages. The second thing is that if you, though there are differences in the modules and features offered by this platform, more or less two or three things remain the same, right? One is the intent intelligence part. The second is, if I have to pick a specific example, Demandbase also has a data module, which is very similar to that of a ZoomInfo, where you get firmographic, demographic, technographic data of the accounts that you are interested in. And it also has an intent intelligence module. It also has an ABM or display advertising module, wherein you can target these the accounts of your interest using display advertising. And obviously, you know, you get to target those high intent accounts as given by the platform, saying, okay, out of the 2,000, I am only having 500, which are high intent accounts when it comes to customer experience transformation. So the second advantage or benefit that I was going to talk about is that you get all of this in like one place, sure, right? If you look at other platforms, one platform will give you the data, one platform will help you do the display advertising. So you'll have to, you know, get data from somewhere, feed it into some other platform, define the targeting there and do the, you know, outreach there. It could be a display advertising platform, it could be an email tool, whatever, right? Now, in a package like an ABM tool, you get all of this in one place. So it's a bit of convenience factor, which I think is the second most important advantage in a platform like this. And just to add to, you know, these two points, pretty much in line with the second point, right? You get to target accounts beyond just the firmographic and demographic characteristics. Demographic in the sense that if you want to target people in these accounts, right? So if you look at a LinkedIn, for example, right, the way in which you can target people is either by their demographic characteristics or firmographic characteristics. You can even target custom accounts using a LinkedIn. Whereas if you go to a Google ad platform, right, you get to target people mostly based on search. There is custom email targeting if you want to target specific people, but mostly it's search based, right? And there is nothing beyond this. You know, if you want to know what else, right? I mean, it's one is based on search, one is custom list of accounts or based on firmographic and demographic criteria. What other targeting options do I have? That's when a platform like an ABM platform will tell you, you know, rather than just going by revenue, job title, region, industry, we are giving you intent intelligence data, which will help you out of all the accounts you want to target. Only a certain percentage are high intent accounts based on the content they are consuming on the web. And if I go back to the same example, which is intent, which is customer experience transformation, and go back to the same numbers, out of the 3,000, we say, okay, the platform will tell you, you target only 500, right? So basically, you get a way to target your prospect accounts beyond the usual targeting methodology that you have in the other platforms.
Okay,
so these are the three predominant benefits. Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's very thorough. Thank you. Let me just peel back a couple of those points. So, intent data. again, as you've discussed openly on LinkedIn, it is a very nascent subject. It's, you know, different things to different people. It's become a little bit of one of those terms that if you ask people, or, you know, some people tell you X and some people tell you Y. But, you know, it's a developing arena, isn't it? One criticism I've heard of some of that is that a lot of intent data is just someone clicking on a display ad, for example. So ad pops up. Let's say it was cloud adoption. Oh, I'm interested in that. Click through, reverse IP, look up organization's name. Suddenly that becomes an intent account. Now, I'm sure I'm simplifying that beyond what it is in reality. But did you find, have you come across that particular sort of scenario where maybe, you know, it's data, but is it real intent data? The first part of the question. Second part is when the platform said to you, look, out of those 3,000, these are, let's say, a couple of hundred you need to be focusing on. Did that actually transpire? Did it end up making that much more productive? Because actually those 200, 300 or whatever number of accounts were further along their buying journey than the 2,700 that were left behind.
Okay, so I'll start with the first part of the question, right? So broadly speaking, intent intelligence or intent signals as such are not just limited to what a platform like a Terminus or Sixth Sense would give you. You know, I just want to clarify that. So intent is any intent, right? A form fill on your website, technically speaking, is an intent signal. You know, somebody has said, filled in a form and a query saying, you know, I want to know more about your
customer experience. That's the best. Probably the best.
That's the best. Yep. Right. So that's the best scenario, right? So broadly speaking, even that is intent signal, right? So which is probably why people tend to say, you know, a click on a LinkedIn display ad is also intent, right? So in that sense, yes, but the intent intelligence that we are talking about in those platforms like demand-based Terminus or Sixth Sense or even Triblio, the one that you mentioned, and there are a few upcoming ones as well, smaller ones like Infotelligent, for example. So there are a few of those, right? Mm-hmm. So what they mean by intent intelligence is, you know, what kind of content people are actually reading. To give you an example, let's say there is a blog on digital marketing trends, right? There is a blog post on digital marketing trends, and it covers various facets of digital marketing, such as SEO, social media marketing, website, and whatnot, right? All that. Now, if what an intent intelligence platform will tell you is based on reverse IP targeting and all the pages they are tracking on the web, let's say this particular blog post is on Neil Patel's website, right? I mean, it's a known name. That's why I'm taking his name.
Yeah.
So if it's on his website, and so many people from Microsoft had visited that page and read content in his page, what an intent intelligence platform would do is pick important keywords from the content and tag it to those accounts. Let's say, for example, against Microsoft, against these many people, digital marketing, SEO, website. So this is the kind of visibility that you get. Now, does a tool like this track all of the web? Obviously not. I don't know what percentage, but they try their best, right? So you still get a decent view of the kind of content consumption that the accounts that you're interested in are doing, right? Coming to the second part of your question, wherein did this prioritization really help? Now, to be honest, we really did not do an A/B testing as to, you know, okay, we're targeting 500 with a demand base. And the problem, the challenge in doing apple to apple comparison was that since we had this priority list, a lot of the effort, you know, maybe it's that 80-20 rule, right? 80% of the efforts were going into this 500 compared to the 20% on the remaining 2,500, right? So I don't think it's a fair comparison because a lot of the resources and efforts were going to that 500, right? But more than the actual ROI out of it, it was more of a method. It was more like adding a method to the madness, wherein we are able to really focus and go dig deep into specific accounts, and you know, really sort of personalize those campaigns, right? And when I say dig deep into these accounts, it's not just about understanding their firmographic information, but also technographic information, right? What kind of tech stack do they have? Are they a Microsoft shop? Are they an SAP shop? Right? Depending on which, we could pitch a specific set of services that we had. That we had across the different horizontals that we had back in Hexaware. So yeah, to answer your question, the second part of your question, it was, I think it was helpful as a tool, but it was sort of difficult to, you know, do an apple to apple comparison. Sure. In terms of whether it really helped or not.
Okay, thank you. So one thing that stands out for me, that is you boiled it down to 500 accounts. Now that is still a big number. Do you think with hindsight that was the right choice? Because in ABM, I suppose parlance, the lingo you hear, it's either one-to-one, one-to-few, or one-to-many. Obviously, one-to-one is literally one-to-one. One-to-few, depending who you talk to, is probably somewhere between 1 and 5 to 15 or 20. And then one-to-many is anything above that. That's sort of my understanding. I mean, is that in keeping with what your understanding is?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, yeah, it's okay. The way we look at it, right?
Okay.
Yeah.
So that would say that 1 to 500 is definitely 1 to many. And I'm thinking, my curious mind is thinking, how did you manage 1 to 500 being relatively new to, let's say, the ABM maturity journey? How did you do that? And did you do it well? You know, if you're looking back on it, do you think that is, if you had that choice again, would you still boil it down to a big number, which is still 500?
Yeah, I mean, 500 is definitely like a big number. And so when I say 500, what the platform would tell you is high, medium, low intent, and high intent is what the 500 is. And we obviously added more layers to sort of filter it down to maybe 200, 250. And these mm-hmm. layers were something as basic as, you know, the revenue criteria. Mm-hmm. We wanted to target, let's say, you know, if the target criteria was 500 million plus in terms of revenue, we said, okay, in the 500 high intent accounts, there are about 100 or 200, which are above 1 billion mark in terms of revenue, right? So we could probably prioritize those. That was one way of looking at it. The other way of looking at it was when an intent intelligence platform like Demandbase gives you the data, it also gives you certain deeper information. Like, for example, when I say people interested in customer experience transformation, it was not just like a category and, you know, the platform would give you high intent accounts. We could also feed in specific keywords related to this particular category. For example, customer experience transformation, digital experience transformation, customer experience tools. Right? So you could actually feed in those keywords to this platform, and it would tell you which accounts are ranking higher for these particular keywords. So we could also look at specific keywords, narrow down the list of accounts to even, let's say, another 200 or 150, and say, okay, I know 500 accounts are high intent accounts, out of which, let me try to run very, very personalized campaigns to only 100. And I will still target the 400. But there I'm going to, you know, they're going to be probably part of a larger nurture campaign, which is not as personalized as the ones that I would do to 100. Right. So this is how we used to prioritize. Now, does it look as beautiful as this in reality when we did it? Probably not. Right. And it's a lot of challenges that come with it. But, you know, we did give it a try. And I'm sure the approach probably would have been fine-tuned over the years, even after I left, right? So, yeah, obviously, you want to do things in a certain way, and they don't really happen perfectly. But like I said in the beginning, it did help us reduce a lot of our efforts and allocate our resources in the right manner.
Excellent. Okay, thank you for that. So we looked at the pros, the benefits. What would you say are some of the cons, some of the disadvantages of using a tool like that from your experience?
Okay, so if you are a very cost-sensitive company, you know, a platform like this probably is not for you, right? Just to pick a specific example, something like a demand base, their intent intelligence plus this display advertising and the sales intelligence, okay, anything except the sales intelligence would cost something around $50,000 per year, right? And similar is the case with any of the other competitors like Domino, Sixsense, even Triblio for that matter, right? So if you are a very cost sensitive company, this is not for you. Second thing is that internally, it's going to be a little difficult for you to prove an ROI for the platform, because when you're spending this much of money, you'll start getting a lot of questions as to why don't you spend that on something else, which are directly, which at least seem to have a direct impact on the revenue, right? So it's going to be a little difficult in terms of proving the ROI, saying, okay, spend this many dollars, you get this many out of it, right? So it doesn't work that way. So if you're looking to establish an ROI through by investing in this platform, that probably is not going to be that easy for you to do. There are ways to work around, but you know, it's not that easy, right? Another thing would be the display advertising module that a lot of these platforms offer. They're good for awareness. I've not seen from my experience them resulting in a lot of quality conversions. So you have to sort of look at this. First thing is the convenience part that I said, right? You get all the data in one place, you get to prioritize, and you get to target these accounts within the platform itself. But they are really helpful for awareness, not so much for conversion, in my opinion. And the last thing is, you know, it's more of a technology privacy related challenge that a lot of these platforms are facing, and they are, as far as I understand, they are still trying to figure it out, which is nothing but the consequences of deprecation of third party cookies, right? Apple has already enforced a lot of privacy related restrictions, and Google Chrome is gonna phase out third party cookies by July 2023, I guess. Sometime in July 2023, mid of 2023, so that is also going to impact a lot of the data these platforms are getting, because the way these platforms work, or the way they get the data, is by working with advertisers, publishers, ad exchanges, which pretty much work on the principle that you can exchange third-party cookie data. So once that's going to be phased out, these platforms are going to be, you know, they're already, I'm assuming they're already working on fixing this issue, but that's going to be more of a technology challenge that these platforms are going to face. So yeah, I think these are some of the cons here.
Yeah, I think, thank you for that. I think you're right. The last point in particular is an interesting one. I think Google, or was it Google? Yeah, they've delayed the introduction of that for about a year. And I think you're right now.
I think they're planning to do it in sometime in 2022.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they extended it because not a lot of people are ready for it yet.
It's a space to watch, and I'm sure we'll be talking more about that. So it was interesting. I was looking at a report, actually, and what are the biggest ABM challenges? And justifying investment, as you said, came in at 26%. I'm just reading these percentages out. So the biggest one was at 47%, delivering relevant content to target audiences. That was seen. I was quite surprised at that. And yet, I suppose I'm not also, because look, you've got this tool, you've got this amazing tool, perhaps. Spent a lot of money on it. You've read the manual. You're ready to push the buttons. Obviously, in practice, it's not just pushing buttons, but for the purpose of this explanation. And then you think, actually, wow, I haven't got any fuel. I've got this Lamborghini sitting on the garage outside, and I forgot to buy any high octane fuel. It's really just not going to go anywhere. And of course, content in this context is the fuel. So if you haven't prepared a content strategy in line with the pain points of the UICP, and you haven't got enough in your library that meet the different requirements of the stages of that buying and research journey, you're going to stall. So actually looking at that, I can see why, having bought all that stuff and got all prepared, you know, perhaps people haven't thought too much about or enough, or allocated enough budget or resource, or got the right quality of content, or and continually content is something that's got to, you got to keep up to date, right? You don't just buy a whole bunch of, or have a whole bunch of content and then it's going to do for the next 12 months. It's something you need to replenish. So that was interesting. The other ones were scaling up programs. I don't know if these are familiar to you. That was 44%. Sustaining momentum was 45%. Mm-hmm. Interesting. Allocating enough budget, 39%. Determining which accounts to target, 39%. So these are the challenges. These sort of things you think, oh, hold on. Scaling up programs, determining accounts to target, sustaining momentum. They should be solved, surely, by this technology, as opposed to become challenges. Or the, yeah, maybe in the context of this, that is what tools like this do. So I'm not, you know, maybe I've misread that infographic I'm looking at, because they are the challenges. It doesn't, I'm not talking about the challenges once you've got one of these tools. So anyway, interesting, I thought, nonetheless. So we've looked at the pros, we've looked at the cons. What sort of skill set do you need? How big of a team do you need to run one of these tools? Let's see.
So, I mean, specifically to manage this tool, if I go back to my own experience, this was part of my responsibility. And it all depends on what you do with the tool also, right? Mm-hmm. We were doing a ton of analysis back in Hexaware. And I would say probably it took around, 30% of my time. And it really depended on the time of the year. Usually demand base was an active place where everybody was in when we are formulating the strategy and marketing campaigns. It was a continuous activity, but in the early months of the financial year, it used to be very busy. But I would say roughly it took 30% of my time. And in terms of the skill sets, it's more like it's not a platform that you can typically learn by taking a Udemy course. There are certifications which are offered by these platforms, which you get only, which you get access to only if you subscribe to their any of their modules.
Right.
So, DemandBase offers a certification on ABM. Terminus does that. So basically, you gotta learn it by using it. It's not easy to find resources to learn these platforms, because it's not that commonly used in the first place. Second, there are not a lot of people who are offering any courses, because you got to have access to a heavy platform like this. And obviously there are other reasons as to, you have to be a partner, a certified partner to these companies as well, if you got to use the tool as such for such trainings. So it's pretty much something that you can pick up as you use it. And all these platforms and companies have a very solid training mechanism to equip you with some of these skills. It could be a combination of on-demand videos as well as the one-on-one trainings they do. And they do have, a solid customer support system, most of them, because typically it's a complex platform to understand, right? Not because the platform is difficult to use, but it's more like the concept itself is a little difficult for people to understand unless you spend time on it. So it's more like, something that you pick up once you use it by leveraging the support system that is offered by these vendors.
Excellent. Okay. Thank you for that. So, okay. So we've covered quite a bit there, and certainly very interesting from someone who's actually been at the coalface, actually rolled their sleeves up and got their hands dirty and worked out from the point where you've decided to buy one of these platforms to getting it working and the challenges that has subsequently given you, and both, the pros and cons. So I think that's really useful. I think the listeners will find that really helpful, because I think you've been objective in your analysis of it. And I think, as you rightly said, you don't need to have this tool to do account-based marketing. For the right organization with the right level of funding and the right commitment to it, then there's obviously a place for it. But it is not, and I repeat this is not a prerequisite to anyone out there in whatever size organization of dipping their toes in and trying and testing an account-centric strategy to your your revenue growth.
Right.
And also, the other thing I would say, it is not mutually exclusive. So if you have an account-centric initiative, whether it's just starting or whether it's further along the maturity journey, it doesn't have to exist on its own, and any other demand generation tactic cannot exist in parallel with it. Certainly, I think those two can coexist. And was reading a really good post today. No, I was watching I was watching some content on demand, and it was Full Funnels webinar, which I missed last week, and I watched it today because I wanted to. And it was talking about the combining of demand gen and ABM and exactly that. So I'm learning. I'm on a learning journey, which I find, you know, I'm curious and interested in it. So thank you for your insights there. So, okay, a couple of quick questions. And I always ask these questions because I'm interested. But so you've been, you've got a long career in marketing. You've been in various organizations, some very large, and 20,000 employees plus, and some smaller. What have you learned most from the biggest failure along your journey?
This is specific to my experience or specific to ABM?
Oh, to your experience.
Oh, okay. I think it's something which is common for everyone, and something which is specific to marketing, since I am a marketer. You know, not all marketing campaigns succeed, right? It's you got to be in peace with it. Just like anything else that you do in life, not everything will succeed, and that's the case with marketing as well, right? You gotta try out different techniques. You gotta keep experimenting, and some of them are gonna be failures, and that's how you learn. And it's not like a one size fits all approach for all companies. Depending on the industry you are in, the size of the company, the approach you wanna take might differ, right? If I go back to the same ABM platform example, it worked and it helped in a company like Hexaware to some extent, whereas the company that I'm currently working in, Econ Systems, for the nature of the industry we are in, for the size we are in, it's not that helpful, right? So it's not a one size fits all approach, not just ABM, but any marketing activity for that matter. And you're going to fail in some of the marketing campaigns that you do, right? And it's going to be a learning experience for you, for sure, right? So I think these are the two most important learnings that I've had till now in my marketing journey.
Sure. I think the caveat to that, and thanks for sharing that, would be, as long as you're in an organization where they accept failure as part of the learning process, marketeers in some organizations are going to be really sitting there very scared, I can't make a mistake here, because management have got no idea that actually that is part of... We must experiment. We must take calculated risks, because unless you'll continue experimenting, you're not going to make progress. So that must be difficult if you're in that sort of organization. If you are, by the way, I think probably a good idea to move on. okay, what should marketeers be doing to create more trust with buyers?
Yeah, I mean, it's a very tricky and sensitive topic, I would say, because first of all, trust is very subjective, and the way different people look at trust is also different. Like, for example, if I were to compare two countries, and I'm not biased in it in any way, but if I compare US and Japan, for example, right, it's easier to win trust, or the way in which you might want to win trust with people in the US is pretty different from that of Japan, right? In Japan, typically you take longer to earn their trust, right? So as marketers, first of all, the very fundamental of earning trust is going to be, in the long term, at least, is going to be about building a brand, right? You don't have a doubt about buying a Nike shoes because you have trust issues, because you trust the brand anyway, right? Or that is the case with even a Coke or any of those large brands.
Right? I was just thinking that, yeah.
So that's... one is definitely building a brand. And the second thing that I want to talk about is, when you're doing your campaigns, be it an email marketing campaign, display campaign, don't try to make it all about you, and don't try to make it all salesy, salesy, right? And try to be a little transparent about it. You as a company, even if you're a Google, you don't have solutions to all the problems in the world, right? So you got to realize that and talk to your strengths. Say that, you know, these are the strengths that our product or service has, and your organization might be facing these issues, and these are the problems we can solve for you, rather than just saying we can solve everything in the world for you, right? So be transparent about your messaging. Talk about only those things which you can do for them. And like I said, don't be too salesy. Try also to add some value to, you know, their prospect. Try to think from their shoes and, you know, add some value to what they're looking for, not just for the company as such, but for them as a professional. You know, to give you an example, if you're targeting a CMO to sell a marketing tool, a CMO would be really interested in understanding what are the latest technologies in the marketing space. So can you attract some attention by sharing a resource, an ebook, a white paper that talks about that, right? So that's one of the ways in which you can do that. So coming back to the question, so you earn trust by being transparent and honest in your marketing messaging as well. I think these are the two key things that marketers can do. Rest would lie with customer success or sales team in the way in which you engage with your customers directly, right? So, yeah, I think these are the two things which come to my
okay.
mind.
That's I really like the answer. I really like the answer you gave to that question. And I also particularly like the fact you pointed out the cultural differences, to be aware of that, i.e. between, let's say, a Japanese audience and a North American audience. And you know, the fact that actually one's going to take a lot longer to earn that trust. I always remember a really good advert that HSBC Bank played in the UK. And obviously it was promoting the fact it was a global bank, and it talked about stuff that you would do in one country but would be totally unacceptable in another. And one was putting your feet on the desk, and I think it might have been an Asian country, I can't remember, where that would be just completely unacceptable. Whereas, you know, maybe in the UK, you know, casually you might have someone just put their feet up. And I thought that was a really good advert, and it must be because I've remembered it, and it was honing in on that cultural nuances, which are so important. If you go into a territory and you're not aware of that, you can fall flat on your face, and your reputation is going to take a long time to rebuild, if at all. So yeah, really good answer. Thank you for that. So one last question, Nasib. What question do you wish that I had asked you on this podcast?
Okay, that's quite an unexpected question. maybe, you know, something around, you know, what maybe misconceptions of ABM, right? And that's, this is something that I try to educate people about a lot, not just specific to ABM, but typically non-marketers and sometimes marketers also, they tend to have a lot of misconceptions about different marketing techniques, strategies, concepts, etc. And ABM is definitely one of them, right? A lot of, on one side, you have people thinking that ABM requires a large budget, large team, a lot of resources, where on the other side, you know, people think that, you know, anybody can do ABM, right? So, you know, probably some of the misconceptions, since we are talking ABM today, it could have been around ABM, but I try to educate people a lot around that, you know, marketing is not something that anybody can do, or it has to be done the right way. And these are the misconceptions, and probably these are the right things that you have to believe in about marketing in general, as well as related to topics, specific topics within marketing, like an ABM.
Mm-hmm. Certainly misconceptions are rife in marketing, and another problem, I think. And by the way, it's a good question that you asked me, or reminded me, or you wanted me to ask you, because it covers a lot, doesn't it? Misconceptions, it's big. The other one is, look, a problem with marketing, and we see this a lot in discussions on LinkedIn, is that everybody has an opinion about it. Whereas if you ask to go to an organization and you went into HR, for example, not everybody's going to tell HR division how to run their business or the next best thing they should be doing. And I think marketing suffers a little bit from that, or maybe a lot. So I'm sure listeners will be nodding their head going, yeah, unfortunately, that is the case. So again, a misconception about marketing amongst non-marketing people within organizations. And on that, we will wrap it up. So Nassif, thank you. It's been a real pleasure having you as my guest today. Really enjoyed the
Thanks,
conversation.
thanks, thanks, thanks a lot, Paul. I mean, it was a nice conversation. I wish we had more time, but you know, it's we have to unfortunately
I can't
wrap
believe
up.
it's we are nearly on an hour. Can you believe that? It just flies when you're having such
It
an
was a
in-depth
pleasure
conversation.
indeed.
Yeah, great. And so before we wrap up, would you tell listeners where they could find out more about you and how to get in touch if they so choose?
LinkedIn is probably the best place to find me. I'm pretty active on LinkedIn. I write about a lot of stuff related to marketing. So that's the best place to find me. And if you want help with anything, or you just want to casually talk marketing, I'm all ears. So LinkedIn is the best place to find me. Yeah.
Perfect. And Nassif's surname, and I did ask him actually just before we switched on the call, and I said, how do you pronounce your surname? Because it is KPO and it's capitals, isn't it? And Nassif explained to me, no, it is KPO. And in a particular part of the world, which is in southern India, I think if I'm correct in you telling me, is that that is not uncommon that there are initials for the surname. Is
That's
that
right.
right? Yeah,
Yeah,
which I found
that's
fascinating. So
correct.
I'd learned that today. So that's good. Again, a cultural nuance. Brilliant. So LinkedIn, I do recommend you follow Nassif because he is very active and shares some great insight. So again, thanks, Nassif. And thank you to all our listeners. Have a fabulous day. And as we say here on B2B Uncovered, never stop learning. See you on the next episode. Thanks again for joining me on B2B Uncovered. If you liked this episode, then please hit the subscribe button. Want to go the full hog? Hey, yeah, I'd love a rating from you. Just tap the number of stars that you'd like to give us. As we're just getting going, that's going to help tremendously. Thank you.